smooth custard, contrasted by the bittersweet velvetiness of the dark chocolate. What's she like? She's the best. My mother stayed home with us kids, my brother and me, and also helped my dad's business by doing the books. Both of my parents cook, though. My dad focuses on the savory and my mom prefers the sweet. That sounds like an efficient delineation of tasks. It is. They've been married for 45 years. Had children late in life. What does your dad do? My father used to be a general contractor, but he retired 15 years ago.
He builds things.
Matt simplified. Yes. He'd consider you a wizard.
Really? A wizard?
Matt looked pleased by the label. My dad never had a use for computers, so anything with the screen feels like magic to him. I help him with all their technology purchases. But give the man wood, a saw, and a hammer, and he'd build you a mansion.
He sounds great, too.
Was that wistfulness I detected in his tone? They are great. I grew up with a stable childhood in every way that matters. They both showed up to be proud for all my major life events. School plays, lacrosse games, graduations. I discovered when I became an adult that sometimes we lived paycheck to paycheck, but growing up, I had no idea. Sure, we never had the latest and greatest gadgets or clothes, but we didn't need it. We had each other. I never felt like I was missing out. Matt's smile was soft, but also struck me as sad. What about your parents? I nudged his knee. What were they like?
Do you have any complaints about your childhood?
I blinked at his question, not as surprised by it as I would have been just a few days ago. I was beginning to understand this was a part of his personality, ready honesty and curiosity. None, I said. But then a thought surfaced, and I amended my original answer. Actually, just one. I grew up not knowing or understanding any perspective other than my own.
Meaning?
I grew up in a small town, and we never traveled. Which was fine, we didn't need to travel, but neither of my parents were big readers. We lived simply with our small cares. They didn't see the need to expose us to the big wide world. Not even the beauty of it.
Is that why you became a journalist?
Maybe. I considered this theory as a possibility, setting my pie on the ottoman next to my cell phone. The compact piece of furniture also served as storage and a coffee table. I'd always been open to new experiences that fed my job as a journalist, but the same could not be said about my personal life, especially recently. I might go to a professional cuddler for a story, but I never would have gone out of a curiosity or willingness to try something new for myself.
Tell me something surprising.
Matt took another bite of his pie, then frowned at the plate as though displeased with the small amount remaining.
What? Something I would never guess about you.
Let's see. I've passed the bar in 2 states.
His eyebrows jumped. You went to law school?
No, I didn't. It was for an article I wrote when I first started out on what it's like to take the bar, how to prepare for it, the time involved, the stress, the relevancy to practice. I thought if I was going to write about it, I should take it.
Wow. And you passed?
Yes, barely. There's only a few states that'll let you take it without going to law school, but first you have to study under a judge. The first time I took it in Wyoming, I studied for 2 years, nonstop. It was all I did, thought about, lived, breathed. I worked for a judge. I dated lawyers. Complete submersion.
Shit.
Yeah. I might have been a little overzealous, but then I was fresh out of college and wanted to experience life.
Why go to such lengths?
Because I gathered a deep breath, trying to figure out how to explain my passion without sounding unhinged. I love knowing something from the inside out, and then sharing that knowledge with the world. The law is so fascinating, changeable, and open to interpretation based on each individual interpreter's life experience. Stories are that way, too. How people read and react to news. providing insight into different ways of thinking, different walks of life, making the world think about an old issue from a new perspective. I love it. I feel so lucky that I get to be the conduit through which others' stories are told. Matt was silent after I finished, and I could see him thinking, deliberating, considering, as though his ideas about me, on a fundamental level, had just shifted. At length, his features settled into a frown, but his tone was shaded with admiration as he said, "You're brave." That made me smirk. "I'm brave?"
"Yes. You're willing to cuddle with a complete stranger. You throw yourself into experiences, all so you can share these experiences with people who might benefit from them. People who, without your stories, may never have been exposed to them otherwise."
I couldn't decide if he sounded irritated, impressed, or confused. I'm not so brave. It's not like I'm in Afghanistan or Syria, risking my life for journalism and truth.
"No, you're brave," Matt contradicted quickly. "You're a test case, a subject of research many times over, except you're the one doing the research, writing up the case report, and then you share it with the world so that others can see it and understand it better."
His words suffused my chest with warmth, maybe even butterflies. And the way he held my gaze with his remarkably attractive eyes, like I was something special, unique and wonderful, made my head swim. The moment stretched, the silence filling with anticipation. And it was the anticipation that thrust me back into reality. Because there could be no anticipation. Right? Right. I smiled at him and he returned it, increasing the tempo of my heart. "Okay, your turn." I nudged him with my knee, asking softly, "Tell me about your parents." Abruptly, most of the light drained from his face and his smile fell. Matt shook his head, making a face.
"No. Ask me something else."
I was surprised, but I bit my tongue to keep from pushing. I wasn't writing a story about Matt, so I didn't need to ask him questions he clearly didn't want to answer. "Okay." I glanced at the ceiling, picked up my pie, took a bite, and pulled a question out of the air that had been on my mind. "Why do you think people become so resistant to change as they grow older?"
"Are they?"
"Yes. There's a ton of research to back that up, none of which I can quote right now without making up statistics."
"Safety?"
He finished off his pie before adding thoughtfully,
"Fear of rejection? Though in my experience, indifference is worse."
Matt's gaze floated to the left, then the right, like he was giving the matter great consideration. Then, abruptly, his eyes cut to mine.
"Why? What do you think?"
I shrugged. "I think you're right." My friend Sandra would also mention avoidance of cognitive dissonance as a factor, but it all boils down to safety.
"Sandra, as in Alex's wife?"
I nodded, bemused. "You know Alex? Since when?"
"We met at your knitting club thing a few weeks ago. Fiona and he worked together, and she gave my name to him. He's breaking into banks as part of his job."
Matt paused, frowned, then rubbed his chin.
"At least I hope it's for his job."
"Yes, it's for his job. He works with Fiona at Quinn's security company. He tries to break into firewalls or something like that to point out weaknesses."
"Exactly. Anyway, he'd come across a bank that was using an AI for its security and had some questions."
"Oh." I frowned. "Alex had questions? For you?" A slyly amused smile bloomed over his features.
"Yes."
My frown deepened. "But I thought he was the best." This drew a laugh from Matt.
"I'm sure he is, at hacking, but AI is a completely different field. He's not computer or programming omniscient. No one is."
"Hmm. I nodded, realizing I didn't really know enough about programming to wrap my mind around the difference. To me, there was just a giant bucket labeled programming, and I assumed if someone was fluent in programming, it meant all types of programming. Perhaps I needed to immerse myself in programming. Anyway, he's interesting. Matt's gaze turned introspective.
He wants to know more about how the field is progressing, so he's coming with me to an AI expo in a few weeks.
My mouth fell open. Really? Alex?
Yes, Alex.
Matt gave me a funny look.
Why do you look so surprised? I'm not a troll, you know. I don't live under a bridge terrorizing goats.
I laughed at that. I know, which, I set my pie on the ottoman again and gathered my courage, is actually a convenient segue into what I wanted to say next.
Oh,
Matt's look of suspicion quickly transformed into playfulness.
Are we going to discuss safe words? Mine is Turing test.
No, not safe words. I wanted to thank you. I laughed at him again, shaking my head. I loved how funny he was, and it struck me how wrong my first and second and third impression of him had been. If I hadn't forced him to share his data with me, I might still be thinking of him as arrogant, petulant, and wooden. But he wasn't those things. Not at all. He'd definitely grown on me with repeated exposure.
Thank me. For what?
His clever eyes danced. For coming with me to the cuddle studio. I appreciated having someone there. I shook my head at the imprecise and diluted nature of my words, and I knew I needed to correct myself. Actually, that's not true. I appreciated having you there. I was thinking about the story, and of course, I'll still need your help with that, but after the series is over, I'm hoping that you and I can continue to be friends. Matt's playfulness waned as I spoke, his expression growing mystified, then suddenly sober, as though he'd just solved a puzzle.
You're friend-zoning me,
he said, and I got the impression he spoke the words as soon as he thought them. I reared back. What?
No, it's fine. I'm just...
A deep V formed between his eyebrows, the adorable wrinkle appearing as he pulled his gaze from mine, turning his body in profile and staring at my ottoman. I waited a few seconds, paralyzed by what he'd said. Did he not want to be friend-zoned? Did he want more than...
No.
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 Maybe... My heart jumped to my throat, and a hot shock of sensation tightened my chest, heated my neck and cheeks. Could he? Did he? I mean, was it possible that this guy, who eschewed romantic relationships with such fervor, was interested? In me? And was I interested in him? I knew I was attracted to him, but... Matt?
No, it's fine.
He shook his head, not looking at me, and chuckled like this was funny.
I have become a student of human nature since I began this project, and this,
he gestured between us, still not looking at me,
is a classic friend zone maneuver. I don't have a more technical word for it. It's very typical of what we've seen in our lab.
Fascinating, really. He turned back to me and his smile was small but easy as he picked up his pie plate and scraped at the remnants, forking a few crumbs into his mouth. I wasn't convinced. Something was off. Matt, excuse me if I'm confused, but didn't you say last week that you're not interested in a long-term relationship?
Yes, that's correct. I'm not.
He responded lightly, but his expression was looking increasingly brittle. Then what is the... My phone rang, effectively cutting off my sporadic thoughts. Gritting my teeth, I glanced at the screen and, seeing who it was, muttered, "Shit."
"Who is it?"
I didn't answer right away, instead leaning forward and sending the call to voicemail. This was the fourth time he'd called in 2 days, but once again he didn't leave a message. What can he want? Gathering a deep breath, I admitted, "It was David, my ex-boyfriend." Matt hesitated, and I felt his eyes on me, probing.
"Are you two reconciling?"
"No," I said, with force. "No. He's engaged, actually. His new girlfriend, I mean, she's not new, she's his fiancé, just sent me an invitation to their engagement party a few weeks ago, and I haven't responded." Matt blew out a long, audible breath.
"Are you okay?"
I nodded, finally meeting his gaze, knowing I looked confused. "Yes. At least I thought I was."
"Meaning?"
"Meaning, when I got the invite, I didn't expect to feel so much about it. It blindsided me, but I thought I'd get over it. I'm happy for him. Them. I am. But I don't know how to describe it."
"Do you still talk to him?"
Matt's tone was friendly enough, but also felt edged with cautious objectivity.
"Have you met her?"
"No. We stopped talking when we broke up." I gave Matt a self-deprecating shrug. "I got dumped." He flinched at that. Just a very small movement, his pity making me roll my eyes at myself. "It's fine. Everyone gets dumped eventually."
"What does he do?"
"He's a chef." Matt made a face.
"Why would you need to date a chef? You can cook."
That made me chuckle. "I didn't date a chef, Matt. I dated a person." He lifted his chin, and I got the distinct impression my response had surprised him.
"Well said."
"Thanks."
"Maybe you're not over him,"
he suggested, his eyes wandering over my face, tinged with something I couldn't identify. I shook my head slowly, my attention drifting to the right and focusing on nothing but my thoughts as I debated this theory. "No, I think I am over him. In fact, I think I was over him before he dumped me. But he was safe and kind to me. And I didn't want to lose that." When I refocused on Matt, I found his gaze lowered to the ottoman, a secretive yet rueful smile tugging his lips to one side. "Matt?"
"I need to leave."
He stood, stuffing his hands in his pockets for the first time all night, and walked the short distance to the door. My heart jumped to my throat and started beating out a frantic staccato. What should I say? Should I apologize? What for? The friend-zoned comment plagued me. I want to be friends with him. That much is true, but he was already at the door, and the time to explain was now or never, yet I had no idea what I was going to say. I started with, "About what I said, I didn't mean that I wanted..."
"I consider it a compliment."
Matt turned back to me, his voice even and steady. Reasonable, aloof.
"I've never been any good at biologically motivated displays of testosterone superiority, and I wouldn't want to waste time of someone who requires them."
He finished with a small smile, but it didn't quite reach his eyes. Or maybe it did. I couldn't be certain. Anxiety clouded my vision. I wasn't in the most rational state of mind. Nevertheless, I tried. But I don't understand how friend-zoning, in our case, given what...
"It's a relief you said something first. Pragmatically, it saved me the conversation. You're not at all my type."
He shrugged, like everything was perfectly fine. His words made me catch my breath, and my heart hurt, because I guess he would know. He had the data. He'd read my dating profile. He knew all about women like me. "I'm not?" I licked my lips. They were suddenly dry.
"No."
Matt's smile grew tight, and he pulled me forward and placed a gentle kiss on my forehead.
"Goodbye, friend Marie," he whispered. "Thanks for dinner and pie."
He turned and walked away.
Chapter 12. Desktop Companion Robot. A proof-of-concept desktop companion robot unveiled at the 2017 Consumer Electronics Show, CES, with human-like movements and communication skills. The robot is able to access and use cloud data and communicate with devices in other locations. The size of a standard kitchen countertop blender, the robot includes an embedded projector that is enclosed within the eggshell-shaped device. The robot can also move backwards and forwards and up and down, and has been designed to mimic human movements. The decision to make the robot sound childlike was deliberate to build a sense of attachment with its human owner. Source: Panasonic. Janie had a scare during the latter part of June, giving me a figurative heart attack. I received the call Sunday. Elizabeth phoned me from Janie's room while Sandra and I were working to finish knitting Janie's baby blanket. Sandra took one end, I took the other, and we'd set a bottle of wine on the coffee table next to us. "Is she okay? Is the baby okay?" My hand flew to my chest and fumbled to switch it to speakerphone, bracing for the worst. "She's fine," Elizabeth said. Sandra and I locked gazes and exhaled our infinite relief as Elizabeth continued. "There was some spotting. We thought it was early labor, but it wasn't. We've also ruled out placental abruption. The baby looks good, but Janie will need to be off her feet for the rest of her pregnancy. She's only 28 weeks, so we're looking at months of bed rest. She'll stay in the hospital for the next few days just so she can be observed around the clock." Then, under her breath, Elizabeth added, "Thank God I live next door." The short surge of adrenaline waned, leaving me with its simmering after effects. "What can we do?" I asked, feeling like I needed to ask. I heard Janie in the background, cursing. Actually cursing. This was significant because Janie never cursed with actual curse words, preferring instead Thor. I winced. "Nothing for now, but it would be great if you could visit over the next few weeks. Stop in?" "Absolutely." Sandra chimed in. "We'll all visit." "Also," Elizabeth lowered her voice to almost a whisper, "can you check on Quinn tonight? You and Fiona are the only ones he'll talk to. Seriously, the dude does not look good." Elizabeth was Janie's best friend, and interestingly enough, she didn't particularly get along with Quinn, but I knew for a fact she cared about him. The problem was Elizabeth and Quinn were just too much alike. Similarly, Nico, Elizabeth's husband, and Janie were alike in their optimistic and sweet dispositions. "Yeah, well, he's probably terrified." Sandra blew out an audible breath. "Poor guy." "Okay, yes, he'll be at the hospital?" I asked, mentally rearranging my next 24 hours. It wouldn't be a big deal, as my job was blessedly flexible. "Yeah, I don't think he'll leave until Janie is discharged. I'm having a bed brought in for him. Hold on." I heard Elizabeth move the phone away from her ear while she gave someone an order. "Okay, I'm back. Listen, I'm going to try to see if we can do knit club at the hospital this week. I think it should be fine as long as we don't stay too late or drink too much." "Got it. I'll spread the word." I made a mental note to message Fiona and Kat, as well as bring my laptop so Ashley could join us. "Thanks. Love you, Marie. And you too, Sandra. Talk soon." "Bye, honey," I said. "And don't forget you need your sleep too. Take a rest." I had a feeling Elizabeth was probably at the hospital past her shift. Every time I'd called her over the last few weeks, she'd been working, and Sunday afternoons were usually her day off. "Thanks for keeping us in the loop," Sandra added. We clicked off the call, sharing another look and sigh. "Well, I'm awake," Sandra said with wide, sober eyes. "I swear, that scared me half to death. Imagine how Janie feels." I couldn't help my solemn expression. I hope she's okay. I should bring her a comic book. The line of Sandra's mouth turned frustrated. That poor woman. This has been the pregnancy from hell. I was just about to agree when the apartment door opened and Alex announced, "We're here."
"Hey!"
Sandra tossed the blanket from her lap and jumped up, running toward the hall leading to the front door. As soon as Alex appeared, she flung herself into his arms. I couldn't help but smile at the two of them as he lifted her off the ground and Carrie hugged her back into the living room.
"Hey, how was the thing?" Sandra asked, covering his face with kisses.
"Fine." Alex placed a biting kiss on her neck and bent, settling her back down on the couch and kissing her again on the forehead, then lips.
"Where'd you go?"
I asked, catching some movement at the entryway and doing a double take at the image of Matt hovering just inside the room. I froze, but my heart didn't. It began galloping in my chest.
"Gack!
There he is!" His eyes were on me, his expression neutral, though I was fairly certain he was just as surprised to see me as I was to see him. We hadn't spoken in almost 3 weeks, not since I made him coconut curry and he'd helped me translate his graphs. I'd texted him just once asking how he was doing and he never responded. I didn't follow up, deciding his silence spoke for him.
"Hi,"
I said on the breath.
"Friend Marie?"
He nodded his head once in greeting, stuffing his hands in his pockets. Then to Sandra, he said evenly,
"Hi, Sandra."
Yep. I was attracted to Matt Simmons. Looking back at our few brief encounters, I'd begun to think that maybe he was attracted to me, and my inadvertent friend-zoning had put him off. However, by his own admission, his last marriage had fallen apart because he and his wife couldn't be bothered to make time for each other, more or less.
"Matthew?" Sandra said, saltiness in her tone.
I slid my eyes to Sandra, giving her a suspicious look.
"Matthew?
He knows what he did."
Sandra returned her attention to the blanket.
"What did you do?"
I looked to Matt for a clue, becoming a little lost in his dark, lovely, attractive, expressive eyes, the window to his huge and impressive brain. Actually, seemingly out of the blue, everything about him was attractive. My heart was still beating wildly, and I fought against a blush rising to my cheeks because my own traitorous brain picked that moment to remember the feel of his lips brushing against the back of my neck.
"So what? You cuddled. Once. He's off limits.
And, lest you forget, Matthew Simmons is allergic to committed relationships with anything other than his job. And you're not his type. And, I forcefully shook myself from my musings. I didn't want to register second place to a person's career. Matt's heart belonged to his work, and even if he did want to date me, which he didn't, I would never ask him to put me first. Because I shouldn't have to. I wanted to be with someone who wanted to put us first. This thought put me back on solid footing. The side of his mouth hitched.
"I hypothesize she's still angry with me about the deception study. About you."
My mouth fell open and I scrunched my face at Sandra.
"You don't need to be mad at Matt, Sandra. I'm completely over that."
"Maybe you shouldn't be."
The set of her jaw was stubborn.
"Maybe you forgive and forget too easily."
"Listen to Sandra."
Alex turned from us and walked back to the kitchen.
"Holding grudges has done wonders for me over the years. Matt, do you want anything? Ladies, anything? Beer? Beer sounds great. Thanks."
Matt trailed after Alex toward the kitchen, but stayed on the living room side at the bar.
"No beer for us. We have wine,"
Sandra called to her husband.
The study was approved by an ethics committee. It's not like it was personal. He didn't single me out for his research. I was just one of many that fit a similar profile.
I'd lowered my voice so only she could hear.
"That's exactly my point."
My friend thrust her needle into the air.
"What is your point?
What exactly did he do that was so wrong?
I said you were just like everyone else.
Matt supplied, accepting the beer Alex handed to him over the bar.
She chewed me out about it the last time I was here.
Sandra, I whispered harshly, feeling embarrassed, especially since his comment about me being just like everyone else all those weeks ago still smarted. But I didn't want anyone else to actually know that.
Don't you Sandra me. Nobody calls Murray typical. Nobody.
My God, look at you. You're like the sexiest woman on the planet. You're like Marilyn Monroe and Grace Kelly and that delightful Kristen Bell from Frozen, except with better hair. And you're also unfairly smart. And an excellent human. And an exceptional cook.
I couldn't maintain my glower. She was my friend. So of course she was over-exaggerating the existence and extent of my positive attributes, but she also made me feel awesome.
Again, I agree with Sandra on this.
Alex strolled out of the kitchen and lifted his beer bottle toward me.
That's like calling Minsky's stochastic neural analogy typical. Nice reinforcement learning reference.
Matt held out his beer to Alex.
Thanks.
Alex clinked his beer with Matt. They both drank. Meanwhile, I was blushing because I was stewing in mortification. Why does this bother me so much? I left a short time later, wanting to get to the hospital around dinner time just in case Quinn and Janie were in the mood for something not offered by the cafeteria. Saying my goodbyes to Sandra and Alex went as typical, hugs and cheek kisses with promises to see each other during the week. When it came time to say goodbye to Matt, he offered me a handshake and a smile that definitely wasn't reflected in his eyes. I kept replaying the handshake in my head all the way down to the lobby because the detached quality to his gaze irked me. Maybe he was still irritated or sore about the friend-zoning conversation. Or maybe he wasn't. Maybe he just didn't like me much. I honestly didn't know. He was so difficult to read. As I exited the building, I decided to push thoughts of the professor from my mind. Not everyone was going to want to be friends with me, and that was fine. I'd made an effort and had been shot down. Moving on. My phone was at the bottom of my purse, so I paused just outside of the doors to send off a text to Quinn, asking if I could pick anything up on my way. I was just tucking it back into its place when Matt came running out of the building. I watched as he jogged past, stopped, then turned and craned his neck from side to side as though searching for something. He turned completely around when he spotted me, taking a surprised step back.
Oh, hey.
He shoved his hands in his pockets.
There you are.
Hey. I pulled my purse strap more completely on my shoulder and met him halfway. What's wrong? Did I forget something?
No.
He hesitated, licking his lips and biting on the bottom one before continuing.
I'm on my way out. We might as well walk together.
Okay. Sounds good. I examined him. His expression still struck me as cautiously dispassionate, I thought, as I picked the path that would take me to the L station. Are you headed this way?
Where are you going?
I have to stop by the hospital. You know, Janie, the tall redhead from our knitting group? She's having some problems with her pregnancy. He fell into step next to me.
Is she okay?
Yes, she's fine now.
You're going to check on her?
Yes and no. I'm hoping she'll be asleep when I get there. I'm mostly going to check on her husband.
Her husband? You mean that big guy who stares at people and doesn't talk?
I'd forgotten that Matt had met Quinn when I'd made pizza and watched Jack and Grace. It seemed so long ago. That's the one.
Why are you checking on him?
Because he'll talk to me. He'll also talk to Fiona, but she's got enough to deal with. Matt gave me a weird look.
Talk to you about what?
How he's doing, how he's coping, if he needs anything, if I can help.
Why would you do that?
Because, Matt, I care about him. He's my friend. When my friends need me, and even when they don't, I'm there for them.
I didn't look at him, but I could feel his eyes on me. Eventually, he cleared his throat.
You're a good person.
Thanks.
Your friends are lucky. You're one of those people no one deserves to know. You're too good.
He looked and sounded so earnest, such that the effect his words had on my heart caught me off guard. Matt turned away and I found I was unable to drop my eyes. He looked unhappy. Hey, I took a cautious step forward. You know, we're friends too, right? Exhaling a short breath through his nose, he slid his teeth to the side before he nodded.
Yes, I know.
Studying him, I decided that if we were actually going to be friends, then we needed to clear the air. Lifting my chin, I asked, "Can we talk about the friend-zoning comment?" He sighed loudly and began walking with a quickened pace.
No need.
Well, I need, and you're going to listen, so here goes. I gathered a deep breath, preparing to launch into my monologue on why he shouldn't have acted so strangely about being friend-zoned. Before I could, he said,
"That was a friend-zone maneuver. I know a friend-zone maneuver when I see one."
Yes, it was, but not for the reason you seem to think. I wasn't trying to put you in a box or assign a label. Matt made a slight scoffing sound. I was making overtures to be your friend, not to be just your friend. His eyes darted to mine, then away. I imagined his mind working as though he were a computer and he sought to compile this new information.
Meaning?
I like you. That made him stop, which made me stop and walk backward because he was advancing on me, his gaze arresting mine.
You like me?
Yes. I endeavored to answer simply, but the look in his eyes made my answer less than simple. Forced to place my hand on his chest to cease his forward progress, I did my best to ignore how his attention was now singularly focused on my mouth. Yes, I like you. You're funny. Odd. Interesting. But even if I was attracted to you, nothing would...
So you're not attracted to me?
Something shifted behind his stare, giving me the impression that everything he'd wondered about me was now clear. Jeez, he was pushy. Just listen. Regardless of attraction or lack of attraction, nothing can or will happen between us.
And why is that?
He framed the question as though my words would confirm some theory he already held. Because you said yourself that you've read that book, seen that movie, and you don't want to see it again.
Meaning?
He blinked, his expression betraying confusion. You're not interested in something long-term, right? A committed relationship. Partnership. And, I shrugged, beating back the butterflies in my stomach with a spiked club. That's what I'm interested in. That's all I want. Matt lifted his chin and rocked back on his heels, effectively disconnecting my hand from his chest. His gaze met and held mine.
I see.
He stared at me, a thoughtful expression on his features. I stared at him, an open expression on mine.
Correct.
His thoughtful expression persisted. I sensed that my response both surprised and confused him.
Friends, it is.
Good. I nodded, forcing a smile. It felt unnatural, and I had to really think about how wide I should make it because I was distracted by a sinking sensation in my stomach. I'm glad we're on the same page. I wasn't unhappy about his acquiescence, yet I'd be lying if I claimed I wasn't disappointed. Disappointed in the situation, disappointed in Matt, and disappointed in the entire male portion of the human race. But the situation was no more Matt's fault than mine.
He'd been honest about his lack of interest in a lasting relationship. I'd been honest about my lack of interest in a truncated relationship. See? Honesty. It gets the job done. And sometimes situations are just shitty. Moving on. Before I could stop myself, I said, "So, why didn't you return my text?" And then I winced, because that sounded needy. His eyes widened for a brief moment, and then he closed them and rubbed at his forehead.
"I apologize. Things have been busy at work, and I..."
"It's fine. Don't worry about it." I waved him off, because his excuses hurt my feelings for some reason. I didn't know why I suddenly felt so raw, exposed. I really needed to rethink this emotional bravery thing.
"No, not fine."
He caught my elbow, pulled me to a stop, then shoved his hands back in his pockets.
"I promise I'll return your text next time. I promise."
Again, he looked and sounded so earnest, my feelings caught in my throat. I couldn't speak. Sincerity from Matt Simmons was apparently my kryptonite. Therefore, I nodded, giving him a tight smile.
"Hey, so..."
He shifted on his feet, gathering a breath.
"What's going on with you? Did you finish your story?"
"Which one?" I began walking again, slowly at first, so we could walk together. I'm always writing and researching several.
"The cuddling story."
"Oh, yeah. I have a draft of that section. But it's part of a larger series about replacing romantic relationships with either paid services or technology, like robots." He made a sound in the back of his throat, turning an incredulous, slow-spreading grin on me.
"Look at you, Sneaky Marie."
"Yep."
"My research is part of the series?"
"Yes. We'll use it for the technology issue."
"I can already tell you which approach is superior."
"Oh, yeah?"
"Yeah. Robots. Paying other people to care about you doesn't work."
"How can you be so sure?" He shrugged, scratching his chin, not answering, instead asking,
"What other paid services are you going to check out?"
Let's see. Have you heard of dry humping professionals?" He gasped, his hand clutching his chest.
"Are you shitting me?"
"Nope." Matt blinked, his eyes moving all over the place like he was trying to process too many thoughts.
"Well, what else? Are you driving down to Nevada?"
"No, no prostitutes, but I am planning to hire a male escort to take me to my ex's engagement party."
"If I can ever bring myself to actually RSVP or answer one of David's calls..."
He stopped me again with a hand on my elbow. This time, he didn't let go.
"You're joking."
"I'm not." I grinned as I assured him of my veracity. "And I made an appointment at an OM studio."
"What's an OM studio?"
He looked petrified. "Orgasm meditation?"
"Just stop. Stop talking. No more of this nonsense."
He shook his head, his delivery of these words reminding me of Ryan Reynolds in any of his comedic roles. The dramatics launched me into a fit of giggles, which felt good. The laughter eased some of the earlier sting.
"Oh, my God, Marie."
He didn't let go of my arm. Rather, he pulled me into a hug, clutching me tightly and whispering,
"I'm so scared for you,"
into my ear while he pet my hair, which only made me laugh harder. Truly, he was hilarious. "You're funnier than I remember." I wrapped my arms around his waist, noting that he felt better than I remembered, too.
"And you're crazier than I remember. I should lock you up, save you from yourself."
"Hey," I half-heartedly pushed at him. "I thought you said I was brave."
"You are brave."
His strong arm squeezed me as he loud whispered,
"But you're also crazy."
Chapter 13. Synthetic DNA, a.k.a. DNA Foundation.
artificial DNA made using commercially available oligonucleotide synthesis machines for storage in DNA sequencing machines for retrieval. This type of storage system is more compact than current magnetic tape or hard drive storage systems due to the data density of the DNA. Many believe it's the answer to the growing problem of data storage needs. 1 gram of synthetic DNA has been demonstrated to hold up to 215 petabytes of information. 1 petabyte equals 1 million gigabytes. Source: New York Genome Center, New York, New York. After our walk and friend embrace in Grant Park, I'd given Matt a large berth, deciding it was best for him to make the next move. I would do anything for my friends, other than force my friendship upon them. He'd texted me 3 days later. Matt, are you dead? Or do you want lunch? His timing was perfect. I'd been working from home, baking bread for the week, and storyboarding the first draft of my article on his research. While arranging my notes, I discovered a few loose ends. Marie, I'll bring lunch. Are you allergic to anything? Matt, cats, sadly, and teenagers, happily. Marie, how about shellfish? Matt, I love shellfish. Grabbing the 2 jars of crab bisque I had in the freezer, disposable microwavable bowls, and a loaf of bread still warm from the oven, I met him at his office. We ate while I asked my questions. When we were finished, he suggested I stay and finish storyboarding just in case I needed additional clarification. "Will you be able to work with me here?" I asked, scrutinizing his office. "No problem. Do you need a table?" He turned a contemplative frown to his desk and workbench, both of which were still covered with papers and various machinery debris. As he looked around his office, he pushed his fingers into his hair, sending it into disarray and drawing my attention to the muscles of his bicep. The man had to work out all the time. He had to. Unbidden, my attention moved over the rest of him. He was in his usual jeans, Converse, nerdy t-shirt attire, but the pants looked new. They were dark blue, and as a heterosexual woman with a pulse, I appreciated how they rested on his narrow hips, fit the curve of his backside and muscled thighs. "I actually work best on the floor," I offered, feeling oddly hot. And bonus, the floor was free of clutter, and free of Matt.
"Really?"
"Yes."
"Okay." He shrugged, scratching his neck. "Do you mind if I play music?"
"Fine by me." We both assumed our positions, him at his desk in front of his wall of monitors, me kneeling on the floor, spreading my papers out in story order. Dead leaves in the dirty ground by the white stripes played over his speakers, and I smiled to myself, but said nothing. I loved the White Stripes, and I loved Jack White as a solo artist. Matt couldn't have picked better music as the soundtrack for the afternoon. I sensed Matt glance at me a few times over his shoulder, but I studiously paid him no attention, pleased that I was already engrossed in my work instead of gawking at his physique and bobbing my head lightly to the music. For a time we worked, saying nothing. Part of the time I moved the papers around on the floor, part of the time I wrote sections on my laptop. I glanced at my computer's clock just as the song switched from Seven Nation Army to I Fell in Love with a Girl, and I was surprised to find 45 minutes had passed. Pausing my work, I closed the laptop and placed it next to me. I stretched, arching my back and leaning from side to side. Matt spun suddenly in his office chair to face me, unsmiling, his arms crossed.
"I have a serious question for you,"
he said, sounding serious.
"Shoot."
I glanced at him briefly, turning my neck from one side to the other.
"If a woman wears a low-cut blouse..."
"Did you just say blouse?" He blinked once, his expression growing flat.
"Can I ask my question?"
"Fine. Blouse, low-cut. What about it?"
"If a woman's shirt is low-cut, like a V..."
He drew a V on his own chest,
"such that a good amount of her cleavage..."
I snorted. Cleavage? Blouse? Matt talked like my grandmother. At least he didn't say décolletage. His lips became a tight line.
Well, what do you call cleavage?
Tits? Breasts? Boobs?
Fine. Low-cut shirt, showcasing half a lady's breasts. Is it okay to look at said breasts?
Yes. I nodded once.
Really?
The question was an octave higher than his usual baritone. Yes, really. Unless she has a date, then no.
What? Why?
Because she's wearing the low-cut shirt for her date, not for you, and you don't want to get punched in the face. But if she's there on her own and wearing something revealing, she wants people to look.
Huh.
His eyes lost focus as they stared beyond me, absorbing the information. You find that surprising? I leaned forward to switch two sheets of paper, rearranging the timeline.
Yes, I assumed it was rude.
After a moment, he shook himself, and I felt his eyes on me again. Didn't you ask your ex those questions? I wondered aloud.
No, we never talked about stuff like this.
Really? Now I was surprised. Wait, stuff like what?
Man-to-woman stuff. What women or men want in general terms. We were both inexperienced when we met, so I'm not sure we knew.
Oh. That made me frown. Well, didn't she wear sexy clothes for you? And more importantly, didn't you ever wear sexy clothes for her?
No, she didn't. And what is your meaning? Did I wear sexy clothes for her? What sexy clothes can men wear?
Suits. I grinned at him. Finely tailored suits are the equivalent of a sexy black dress to women. Or lingerie. His eyebrows ticked up and his eyes widened.
Really?
Yep. It takes effort for a man to wear a nice suit, just like it takes effort for a woman to dress up.
So, it's the effort. That's sexy.
Crawling on my hands and knees, I picked up my notes from the floor, careful to keep them in order. I guess that's one way of looking at it. Again, I felt his eyes study me before he said thoughtfully,
"You're already really sexy. I feel sorry for anyone who has to resist you in a black dress."
That made me laugh, especially the abstract tone of his voice, like we were discussing AI learning theory. But it also made my neck hot. Suddenly, I was distinctly aware of how small his office was and how I was currently positioned on my hands and knees and how, if he stood and unbuckled his belt...
Whoa. Settle down.
That thought process sure escalated quickly. Suppressing the unbidden surge of sexy suggestions, I tossed him a mock distrustful glance, but couldn't quite lift my gaze to his. "You're just saying that so I'll make you more bread."
"You caught me."
Matt's tone mirrored my mock seriousness, but I also noticed his smile was weird, stiff, and he was blushing just slightly. The light shade of pink heating his cheeks made me wonder if he hadn't realized what he was saying, what his words sounded like, or what they revealed of his thoughts until after he'd said them.
"Hey, look who it is."
I tore my eyes from Matt, finding Dr. Merrick leaning against the door jamb, eyes on me, a small smile tugging his mouth to one side. Sitting back on my ankles, I returned his grin. "Hello?"
"What do you want?"
Matt's tone was less than happy. Dr. Merrick's gaze moved to Matt briefly, narrowed, then returned to me.
"Did you get everything you needed for your article?"
I opened my mouth to respond, but didn't get a chance.
"She did,"
Matt answered for me. The older man inspected us both with unveiled surprise.
"So you're here finishing up?"
"Yes, almost finished." I gestured to my stack of papers, just tying up loose ends.
"We might go see a movie after,"
Matt said, causing me to send him a surprised glance over my shoulder. He ignored my probing look.
"Then dinner,"
he added. This was news to me. Matt's eyes remained fixed on his colleague, and both men were quiet for a protracted moment while I glanced between the two of them and attempted to decipher their odd staring contest. Eventually, Dr. Merrick cracked a smile and nodded subtly.
"Oh, by the way, Greta is looking for you, Matt."
"Oh?" Matt stood, his entire demeanor changing in an instant.
"Did the NVIDIA chip come in?"
"Yep."
Matt moved to where I was still sitting on the floor and offered me his hand, saying as he pulled me up,
"Do you mind hanging out here for a few minutes?"
It was hard to miss the fact that he still held my hand even though I was now standing, or the fact that his thumb was brushing back and forth over my knuckles. "Fine with me?" I gave him a teasing smile, since we didn't actually have plans beyond lunch.
"Thanks."
Before I realized his intent, Matt bent and placed a kiss on my cheek, squeezing my hand before letting it go and saying,
"I'll be right back. And pick a movie."
I watched him dart out the door, Dr. Merrick moving to one side to allow him to pass, then jog down the hall, his sneakers making light squeaking sounds as he went. I turned, smiling to myself at Matt's strange behavior, then bent to pick up my papers and laptop, all the while feeling Dr. Merrick's eyes track my movements. Finally, he said,
"What movie do you want to see?"
"The new Harry Potter movie?" He chuckled lightly.
"I've seen it 7 times already."
"Big fan?" I grinned.
"No, but my 10-year-old is."
"Ah," I nodded. "I sometimes babysit for my friend's kids, and we play the board game while wearing wizard hats, scarves, and wielding wands."
"They make you do it?"
"Oh, no." I shook my head vehemently. "I make them do it. I even knit their scarves." He barked a laugh, leaning against the doorframe again, his eyes moving over me.
"I'm impressed."
"Don't be. I knit all the time. It's an obsession."
"No, I mean, I'm impressed you've managed to get Matt out of the office. He's here so much we sometimes joke he should give up his apartment lease."
"Huh, is that so?"
"Yes, that's so."
Dr. Merrick's eyes continued to travel over me thoughtfully.
"I guess it's a good thing you never signed that consent form."
That made me cock my head to the side. "Why is that?"
"I'm back. What did I miss?"
Matt called from down the hall, jogging until he pulled even with his office. "Do you run everywhere?" I asked, both incredulous and amused.
"No, only when checking out the beautiful new GPUs we're using for training our AI's deep neural networks. Or, you know, when I get to see you."
That earned him a smile. "You're sweet." He returned my smile with a bright one of his own.
"I speak only truths."
Unable to stop myself from scrutinizing this new version of Matt, and the earlier hand-holding, and the earlier kiss on the cheek, I couldn't understand the origin of his sudden demonstrative affection for me. Maybe it's just a part of his inherent playfulness. Dr. Merrick glanced at the linoleum, looking like he was hiding a smile and stepping back from the door.
"Okay, have a good time, kids."
I wrinkled my nose at the word kids, but stepped forward to give him a departing wave. "If you let me know what Hogwarts house your 10-year-old is in, I can make a scarf." Dr. Merrick's gaze moved from me to where Matt stood at my side, then back to me.
"I'll let Matt know so he can pass it on."
We both watched the tall man depart, Matt eventually nudging my shoulder with his, drawing my attention.
"You're going to make me go see the new Harry Potter movie, aren't you?"
"That's right." I nodded once. He glowered. "And then after, I'll make you coconut shrimp." He grinned.
Real-time images like video game graphics rely on GPUs that perform certain types of mathematical calculations. For example, matrix multiplications.
Ah, yes, good old matrix multiplications. Here, let me. I selected a deep red button-down dress shirt on a hanger and held it up to Matt's chest. It looked nice. Very, very nice. I added it to our stack. Meanwhile, he continued with barely a pause.
For example, matrix multiplications, and they can handle huge amounts of computations in parallel. The same features are suitable for different applications, like running climate simulations or modeling attributes of complex biomolecular structures.
I sighed, gazing at him with a smile, my brain and other key part of me completely aroused by Matt saying the words, complex biomolecular structures. Believe it or not, Matt had invited me out on a Tuesday afternoon to close shop. Apparently, his chairperson had suggested, less than subtly, that many professors in the engineering department had been confused regarding Matt's tenure status. They thought he was an undergrad student. Presently, we were in the Hugo Boss store, or Boss, and I'd made the glorious mistake of asking him what an NVIDIA chip was, the item he was so eager to see when he left me briefly with Dr. Merrick. Apparently, I couldn't have asked a better question. His eyes widened excitedly, and like every time he spoke about his work, he stood straighter, exuding a seductive confidence with his deep, thorough knowledge.
GPUs are recognized as proficient at training deep neural networks, the mathematical structures roughly modeled on the human brain.
His grin became massive, and he leaned close, as though about to share something truly amazing.
They also rely heavily on repeated parallel matrix calculations.
Get out, I said. That's awesome. He nodded.
I know.
Then touched my nose lightly with his index finger.
You are super cute when you pretend to know what I'm talking about.
That made me laugh, and I shook my head at him. And you are super cute when you talk about your computery witchcraft. How many white dress shirts do you have?
One. And now you know what it's like for me all the time.
He glanced around the store as though we were within the interior of a prison. Meaning? I'd picked up on this peculiarity of speech he had. Instead of asking, what do you mean? He would frequently just say, meaning?
Over the course of my adulthood, and childhood for that matter, everyday conversations frequently sound like Greek.
That had me wrinkling my nose at him. What are you talking about? You have no problem communicating with me. One of the sales associates approached. Hi there, are you finding everything you need? Her gaze moved over Matt appreciatively, then to me, her eyebrows hitching on her forehead. If I was reading her expression correctly, it communicated, your boyfriend is hot.
Marie?
He deferred, clearly oblivious to the pretty woman's appreciation. I think so, but could you start a room for him? No problem. She reached forward to grab our current selections. Actually, they were my selections. Matt hadn't touched anything but me since we'd entered, shoving his hands in his pockets. I'm looking forward to the fashion show, she said, then winked at me. I couldn't help my grin. She was being so adorably obvious, and it made me feel like she was giving me a mental high five, a la, you go, girl.
That's because you don't seem to mind my questions,
Matt said once she left, picking our conversation right back up as he considered the suit next to him on a mannequin.
Are we getting suits here?
That stopped me in my tracks. Do you want a suit? He scrutinized me like my question was a test.
I don't know. Do I?
I guess we could get you a suit if you think you'll use it. I contemplated the mannequin, touching the fabric of the three-piece with my fingertips. This is fine.
Fine?
He glanced between me and the suit.
Is fine good?
I shrugged. Or we could go someplace less expensive. It depends on what you want to use it for. Matt stared at me, analyzing my features attentively.
See, it's like you're speaking a different language.
I laughed. Okay, what are you going to use it for?
You haven't given me enough information in order to make a decision. I need more data.
I laughed again. You have several different categories of suits, depending on the needs of the person. If you're using it to go to a funeral or twice a year for weddings or something like that, then you probably don't need a very expensive suit. If that's the case, we should go someplace cheaper.
What's the downside of a less expensive suit?
They don't look as nice, and they're not usually great quality, which means they wear out faster.
But this suit, he gestured to the one next to us, will look better and last longer.
Yes, this is a medium quality suit.
Where can one acquire a high quality suit?
I glanced to the right, trying to remember where Janie said Quinn bought his suits. There's a designer in Chicago, Daniel George, who will hand make a suit for you, or even shirts using fabrics and a cut specifically chosen for you.
It's literally tailor-made.
Correct.
And it'll look the best?
And last for a long time, yes. But it'll cost a lot, like a lot, a lot. He gave me a flat, teasing smile.
For a writer, you sure do use the big words.
I rolled my eyes, turning from him. Fine, the expenditure will be exorbitant. He came up behind me, peering over my shoulder as I thumbed through a rack of dress pants.
Is there any place like that for women?
Not really. I mean, you can get custom clothing made, but most women don't.
Because it's expensive?
That, and because there's already so much to choose from ready-made that runs the gamut of inexpensive to upscale.
Where do you shop? For yourself?
The only thing I ever pay retail for is yarn. He paused like he was trying to untangle a puzzle.
Meaning?
I usually shop consignment. I like it because A, it's a lot cheaper. B, consignment shops have a bunch of brands rather than just one, so it's like going to multiple stores at once. He paused again, considering this information, then said, huh. I looked at him because the way he said huh was peculiar.
Huh.
What?
Your methods are efficient.
He was smiling at me, giving me the sense that he very much approved of my methods, my efficient methods. Watching Matt try on clothes was a ridiculous amount of fun. Since it was after lunch on a weekday, the store was very slow. Therefore, a few of the sales associates meandered over, having nothing better to do, and soon it became a one-man fashion show. At first, he was very stiff, glowering when he emerged from his dressing room, clearly uncomfortable. It didn't help that he had no idea how to put on nice clothes. One of the sales guys, Mason, I think, noticing how Matt had left his shirt untucked and was wearing dress pants without a belt, shook his head, saying,
"You need an intervention, bro."
As it turned out, Mason and Keely, the female attendant who had set up Matt's dressing room, were dating and were happy to tag team him, where Mason was bad cop and Keely was good cop.
"No, bro, don't wear it like that."
Mason unbuttoned the top two buttons of Matt's shirt.
"You can't button it all the way. You only button it all the way if you're wearing a tie. Didn't anyone ever tell you that?"
"No," Matt answered honestly, turning to look at himself in the mirror once Mason and Keely had adjusted his clothes. His frown turned upside down and he blinked, like he didn't recognize himself, but he liked what he saw. It was such an adorable moment, I could only tuck my hands under my chin and watch quietly. "You look so great," Keely said enthusiastically. "This is like one of those makeover shows."
"How long y'all been dating?"
Mason asked me at one point while Matt was changing. We're not. We're just friends." Mason blinked at me, his eyes moving down, then up.
"Is he gay?"
Keely smacked her boyfriend on the shoulder, laughing. "He's not gay. He's clueless."
"Clearly."
Mason's mouth transformed into a dissatisfied line. "Don't worry, Mama." Keely gave me a wink, leaning close. "He'll figure it out. Sometimes you have to lead the horse to water." I shook my head, and it was on the tip of my tongue to correct her, to say that I wasn't interested in him that way. But I couldn't. Because over the last 2 weeks, we'd worked together, seen a movie together, eaten dinner and lunch together, and now shopped together. the more time I spent with Matt, the more denying the escalation of my interest in him sounded like a lie.
Chapter 14. Pizza Shoes. A pair of sneakers with a button on them that allows its owner to order a pizza by pressing the button. And that's it. I swear to God I'm not making this up. Source, Pizza Hut. My hopes were starting to revive without me explicitly telling them to do so. I was hopeful and confused. My first clue that things were seriously amiss was my growing preoccupation with buying things for him. Everywhere I went, I saw items I wanted to get him. A RoboCop mug, a Space Invaders tie, an Ultron bathrobe. I did end up buying the Space Invaders tie. It was on sale. Yep, so I actually saved money when I bought it. Right. Currently, it was Thursday night, and Matt had texted me again, this time to see if I was dead or if I wanted to eat dinner. Once more, his timing was impeccable. My copy of the Cuddle Sutra had just arrived in the mail that afternoon, and I needed a partner to try out the positions. Although at first Matt and I spent time together because of his research, that hadn't been the case for several weeks. He'd call because he was hungry for something coconut, then because of a movie we both wanted to see, or a bar that had good cocktails. Pretty soon we were hanging out frequently and texting multiple times a day. It was like having a boyfriend, but without the sex. Or commitment. Except we did touch. A lot. We hugged and kissed each other on the cheek. Sometimes he'd kiss me on the neck if he was embracing me from behind. We even held hands when out in public. Unless I was misreading Matt completely, I thought that maybe, possibly, he was starting to feel something for me beyond just simple attraction. Sure, he hadn't said anything, but he was just so, so... Big sigh. Brilliant and affectionate and hilarious, so hilarious and handsome, so handsome and just wonderful. I felt like maybe our friendship was on the precipice of becoming something more. If additional cuddling didn't push things and him in the right direction, then nothing would. Marie, you can come over, but I'll need you to help me with something. Matt. What? Marie. Cuddle positions. Matt. I'll be there in 5 minutes. Matt arrived with his laptop and a 1.75 liter bottle of Patron Silver. For margaritas. Or shots, he suggested with a grin, giving me a kiss on the cheek. I took the gigantic bottle from him. I've never seen a tequila bottle this big before.
That's disappointing. We should hang more.
I glanced over my shoulder, laughing at him as he trailed me into my apartment. We hang out all the time.
Clearly it's not enough if this is the first time I've exposed you to the correct size of a Patron bottle.
Well then, thank you. I expect you to help me drink it. Setting the huge container on the counter, I grabbed the small garment box I tucked away earlier and handed it to Matt. Here, this is for you. He accepted the gift hesitantly, shooting me a confused but delighted look.
What's this for?
No reason. Just open it. I tucked my hands under my chin and watched him, not even trying to hide my big, goofy smile. Matt opened the box and I was happy to see how his eyes widened with pleased surprise.
Space Invaders? On a tie?
He yelled. I know! I yelled.
I love it.
Matt bent and gave me a hug.
I will wear it all the time. I should put it on now.
As he straightened, I shook my head. No, save it for a special occasion, when you want to make a good impression. It'll be your lucky tie. Though he'd purchased several outfits the day we went to Hugo Boss, I hadn't yet seen him in any of them. Tonight, for example, he was wearing his usual uniform of t-shirt and jeans, with the t-shirt being a schematic of a Dalek.
Still smiling, his gaze warm with good feelings as it moved over me, he tucked the box into his bag.
Marie, you are the sign to my cosine.
My eyelashes fluttered, and so did my heart. But I managed to tease, "Are you saying we'll never be on the same wavelength?" He moved his head to the side as though considering my words.